Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. In addition to our guest interview, we'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. We are now just over a week away from the end of the 5785 Jewish year. Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year of 5786, begins Monday night, September 22nd at sundown, continuing Tuesday, September 23rd. And Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is coming up fast too, October 1st and 2nd. This season is called the High Holy Days. In Hebrew, the Yamim Noraim, or Days of Awe, and also referred to as the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, the 10 days of repentance and return. It is the holiest period of the year for Jews, a time when we look back at the year we've just lived and seek to improve ourselves and our relationships in the coming new year. It is also a uniquely good time to look back over the past 12 months and do an assessment, both of our own conduct and of the events that impacted the Jewish world. We each personally need to assess our own past year of life for how we lived it and how we wish to change. That isn't something even our outstanding Two Jewish radio show and podcast with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends can do for you. It's on you, individually, always, in Jewish tradition. But that's what makes it so important to come to Shul, to go to Temple for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's a time to be inspired to do personal reflection, to take an accounting of the soul, a cheshbon ha-nefesh, to decide how we can be better. The end of the year is also a great time to look at the last 12 months of Jewish experience in the aggregate. But boy, this was some year. Let's start by talking about Israel, and anti-Semitism. Well, we probably don't need to talk about much else after that, now do we? We won't have the time. In fact, I think we'll just talk about Israel today and leave the anti-Semitism discussion for the next show, just before Rosh Hashanah next Sunday. There are three ways to look at Israel's standing now, in my humble too Jewish opinion. One is its military and geostrategic position. The second is its diplomatic, public relations, and reputational position. And the third is Israel's moral and perhaps political position. The three are all related, of course, but they are distinctly different in important ways. First, I'd like to reflect on Israel's position now, as opposed to where it stood not exactly 1 year ago, but in the wake of October 7, 2023. By examining the military and geostrategic situation of Israel today, as opposed to where it was just after that horrific war crime set of attacks by the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas, October 7, 2023, well, in the aftermath of the worst massacre of Jewish civilians since the end of the Holocaust, 1,200 dead, as well as the brutal kidnapping and abduction of 250 Israeli citizens, some alive, some already murdered, Israel was forced into a war it had avoided for some time. At that moment, now almost 2 years ago, Israel was essentially surrounded by extremely hostile terror regimes that openly sought its total destruction, wanted to repeat the Holocaust. To the south, there was Hamas in Gaza, which had just openly declared war and perpetrated war crimes in rape, murder, arson, torture, and the abduction of civilians, murdering children and the elderly, as well as continuing its ongoing war crimes by firing rockets at civilian targets all the time. In the north, the much larger terror network of Hezbollah controlled much of Lebanon, regularly threatening and shooting at Israel. To the east, Syria was an implacable foe. Still under the Bashar al-Assad regime, the Assad regime he and his father had lasted more than 50 years, Syria was dedicated officially to the destruction of Israel. It was allowing arms shipments from Iran to the Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon, placing Iranian military units right on Israel's border. Farther east, Iran was financing all the terror groups with its oil revenue and constantly threatening to destroy the Zionist entity. They even had a huge doomsday clock with the destruction of Israel on it as a goal. Iran was moving ever closer to possessing nuclear weapons and delivery systems, promising to use atomic weapons against Israeli civilians to wipe out the Jewish state. Even further south, the Houthi terror regime in Yemen was lobbing ballistic missiles at Israel. Well, now, nearly 2 years later, that strategic situation is completely upended. Israel is in a vastly stronger position than it was. Yes, Gaza is a mess, but Hamas has been mostly destroyed, its leadership killed, the majority of its massive terrorist army either dead or captured, its tunnel network blown up. Hezbollah was beheaded by the Mossad and the IDF, its leaders also dead, most of its armaments destroyed, its position in Lebanon, well, it's moved from preeminent to precarious. The Assad regime in Syria collapsed. The country lapsed into civil war. Syrians are now intent on attacking each other, not Israel. The conduit to Hezbollah in Lebanon is broken. Iran is viewed as an enemy by the new leadership. Iran itself proved to be a paper tiger. It was swiftly defeated by Israel, with a little bit of help from America, in a war that lasted less than 2 weeks. The Houthis in Yemen have seen their own leaders killed, their harbors bombed, their ability to do more than annoy Israel severely limited. It's a new era in the Middle East in which even an oil-rich funder of terror like Qatar can no longer provide safe haven to mass-murdering terrorists. Qatar, take your pick. So that much at least, that's a positive development. Now the hostages who remain alive, there are perhaps 15 to 20 of them, have suffered unimaginably for nearly 2 years. And they are apparently no closer to being freed through this latest IDF Gaza City offensive. As far as the diplomatic and public relations situation for Israel, well, it's terrible. Mind you, you'd rather be alive and win the war than be loved and dead in a war that you lose to terrorists intent on your total destruction and annihilation. You know, all those organizations that promised to commit genocide on the Jews, something Israel is most decidedly not doing. Anyway, in the Middle East, if somebody attacks your civilians, you must make it explicit that the price for doing that is so unacceptably high that you even destroy their leadership directly. Israel has done this. But that's not how the rest of the world sees it. Israelis and Jews have been attacked by anti-Semites the world over with phrases like Free Palestine, Globalize the Intifada, in other words, let's open up terror on civilians everywhere, and Israel equals genocide. It's all based in foundational lies, but the public relations look is nonetheless awful. In addition to winning the tactical and perhaps strategic war, if you were Israel, you'd also like to avoid having a variety of Western nations recognize your implacable enemies as having a nation, when in fact they don't. You'd also prefer not to be ostracized, hatefully characterized, and generally despised for doing what you were forced to do to save your nation and your people. The past year has seen a flood of anti-Israel propaganda become normalized throughout the world, and anti-Semitic propaganda too. World opinion, always fickle, never especially rational, typically not moral or ethical, world opinion nonetheless somehow sees the Palestinians as innocent victims being attacked by the big bad Israeli military. The truth is not that at all. The facts don't support the wild claims being made that continually demonize Israel, but the war in Gaza undoubtedly has now normalized a form of anti-Zionism that is really the old-style anti-Semitism reworked into a new form of Jew hatred. Everybody else can have a country, but not the Jews. Perhaps the worst look in all of this is a moral one. It's the problem of potential starvation in Gaza. Now, there is no doubt the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas have long weaponized food in the Gaza Strip, hoarding it, controlling the aid supplies, profiting off of it by charging usurious rates for stolen food to starving people, using food to reward their allies, denying it to their own Palestinian opponents. But when Israel stepped in to try to create a less terroristic form of feeding the people of Gaza, the whole thing blew up in their faces. It gave the awful impression that Jews were denying food to the hungry. That's a look we simply cannot allow to happen. In addition, the situation on the West Bank this year has flown mostly under the radar. That should not be the case, perhaps, but with all the high-profile wars going on in the region, it is. Look, what the Israeli settlers have been doing in the West Bank this year is not good. In fact, while Palestinian terrorists have murdered people in the West Bank and recently Jerusalem, settlers themselves have been aggressively attacking Palestinians with some regularity. It's a bad situation on the ground. More violence will not improve things. As I noted, this has been an extremely complex year for Israel. What we all should hope for in this coming 5786 year is the freedom for the remaining hostages and that great and always elusive blessing, peace. To play us in for Rosh Hashanah coming up this morning, now just over a week away, here's a bit, more than that, of the late great cantor Yosla Rosenblatt's famous Takaba Shofar, Sound the Great Shofar of Freedom, as sung by Yoni Rose with the Jerusalem Symphony Orchestra. That was Takaba Shofar, Sound the Great Shofar of Freedom. For the coming holiday of Rosh Hashanah, just a week away, you can join us in my own congregation Beit Simcha for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur this year. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to register. We would love to have you join us. When we return in a moment on Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Abby Liebman, the CEO of Mazon, the Jewish response to hunger, will explain how Mazon started as it celebrates its 40th anniversary year of feeding the hungry from a Jewish point of view and how it has grown and developed. Meet her when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation.
known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish Art guests this morning. Abby Liebman is the president and CEO of Mazon, an extraordinary Jewish response to hunger that is now celebrating its 40th year. She has an extensive background serving all kinds of social justice organizations and nonprofits. And she's a lawyer, which we'll forgive her for anyway. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi. It's nice to speak to you.
So I'm old enough to remember when Mazon was this kind of odd idea, a Jewish response to hunger that Leonard Fine had come up with. Tell us a little bit about what Mazon does now.
So in truth, Mazon hasn't changed much at all from the vision that Label Fine had 40 years ago. And when he founded this organization, it was at a time when he felt that there was a lack of response to hunger generally, not only internationally, because at the time there was a famine in Africa that was getting very little attention, but also here in the United States. It was the same time as, you might remember, Hands Across America,
right,
where there was a lot of the big community organizing effort around drawing attention to hunger in America. And Label felt that the Jewish community had not only the opportunity, but an obligation to respond to those who were struggling, to lift up that issue, to craft a response that was grounded in Jewish values and Jewish teachings, that would focus on the dignity of every individual, to really illuminate the idea that we are meant to take care of one another and that our community writ large is represented in the world by our government, and that our government has an obligation to address the needs of those who are the most vulnerable. And so Label knew what he was doing was creating an organization that focused on the idea of securing policy change to make certain that people were being taken care of when they were most in need, and to help to prevent people from falling into that need in the first place. We still do the same thing now.
Now, generally speaking, well, Mazon is not driving around delivering food. It's making grants to organizations that provide hands-on food security to people. Is that a fair assessment?
To some extent, these organizations do, in fact, provide what we think of as direct service, that is, feeding people or organizing others to feed them. But the support that Mazon gives to these other organizations and its work as well is all designed around advocating for the needs to be addressed of those who struggle with hunger. So the work that we do, both as an organization ourselves, but also through the partners that we have that we provide support to, is about building a policy response that will enable those who are struggling to see some opportunity for relief and to find themselves secure and stable enough to support themselves and their family.
We will talk much more with Abby Liebman about Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger, and the work that it's doing in what is now a very complicated environment when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in Catalina Foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a terrific array of services, classes, and events this fall, including the High Holy Days coming up fast. Established 7 years ago by wonderful congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the Catalina Foothills. Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday morning, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests always. Call 520-276-5675. The High Holy Days are almost upon us. Just over a week from now, the evening of September 22nd, Rosh Hashanah will be here. Join us at Beit Simcha for our beautiful, meaningful, and inspiring Days of Awe services and events. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Guests are very welcome for our extraordinary and beautifully musical services, but you must register in advance. All fees are applicable to membership if you choose to join. Religious school is available now for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us in our fantastic Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with terrific Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. and services at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. All of our services are broadcast on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, and they are extensive. From outreach classes to Hebrew to Kabbalah to history to Bible, lots and lots of stuff, adult bar bat mitzvah too. All of those are available in person and on Zoom. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona, in this wonderful new 5786 year. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, is a very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So, as is very traditional for you, you're about to go on a trip, but this time to go to a conference in Montenegro. Tell us about it and how it relates to some of our recent conversations about kind of the revival of Jewish life in some interesting places.
Yeah, in mostly in former communist countries. We touched last time about on the Jews of Ukraine and Russia.
Right.
But to a maybe slightly lesser degree, this is true all over countries that used to be behind the Iron Curtain, and one that was never quite behind the Iron Curtain, it kind of straddled it, which was the former Yugoslavia. The former Yugoslavia, for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with it, a non-aligned country, its leader, Tito, was one of the founders of the non-aligned movement. And it did guarantee some certain basic rights. Like, you could always buy a Time magazine or an International Herald Tribune in Belgrade, which was not the case in Moscow. And religion wasn't as totally forbidden. There was a Federation of Jewish Communities of Yugoslavia that had its headquarters in Belgrade. But the country was technically divided into a handful of different republics, all of which are independent countries these days. So there was Macedonia, there was Serbia, there was Bosnia, there was Croatia, there was Slovenia, there was Montenegro. And in those days, the president of the Federation of Jewish Communities in Yugoslavia told me repeatedly, don't bother with Montenegro, there's no Jews there. And that's certainly what appeared to be the case in all the population studies and all that. But there, in fact, were Jews there, as there are everywhere in Europe. They were just kind of closeted and very discreet. Well, the lack of community institutions made it impossible for them to affiliate or register in any way. So for the longest time, it appeared that there were no Jews at all in Montenegro. Imagine my surprise when I went to a big conference in Montenegro at a coastal resort called Budva and discovered that there was now a chief rabbi of Montenegro, about whom we've talked before on your show, because he is a fellow Angeleno.
Yep.
But what turns out is that above and beyond the Jewish community in Montenegro, which is growing rapidly, Jews who left the former Yugoslavia as a result of wars in the 90s or in search of greater economic opportunities elsewhere formed their own diaspora all over the world. Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the U.S., Israel, Geneva, you name it. There's a population of Jews from the former Yugoslavia who may still think of themselves as Yugoslav Jews, a concept that doesn't really exist in the former Yugoslavia anymore, but it certainly exists in this diaspora, and they like getting together. So they started to arrange an annual conference in this lovely coastal resort town called Budva, which unites Jews who grew up together, who once participated in Maccabi games together on the basis of a nation that no longer exists, Yugoslavia, and with the help of a lot of Israeli institutions, like the Sochnut, the Jewish Agency, and others. And there's financial support, and that buys these guys a lot of airtime in terms of giving lectures or presentations or setting up tables with brochures and pamphlets. Part of the purpose of this conference is to promote immigration to Israel. But it's really an overarching thing that, regardless of your degree of observance or your degree of Zionist convictions or where you live, attracts all these people to come back like moth to a candle. And apparently, I did a good enough job of speaking there 5 years ago that I'm invited back to speak again in October.
It'd be fascinating to get your report and to hear more about how Jewish identity is affirmed in a diaspora from a diaspora, actually.
Right.
Thanks so much, Tom, and an early L'Shana Tova.
And to you. Thank you.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A man starts to tell a joke at a party. You see, these two old Jews are on their way. Suddenly, he's interrupted by a sensitive guest. Why do so many jokes begin with Jews? Why must you people always tell jokes about Jews? Are you some kind of anti-Semite? I'm sorry, apologizes the storyteller. I'll start over. You see, these two old Chinese guys are on their way to a bris. You see, if you didn't know, a bris is a circumcision celebration ceremony. Never mind. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we celebrate the final Shabbat of the year, which means our Torah portion is one of the great sections of the whole year, called Nitzavim. It says, "You stand here today, all of you, from the oldest to the youngest, the wealthiest to the poorest, the most famous to the humblest, the leaders of your community and the strangers visiting with you. You are all part of the covenant with the Lord your God. You and every other generation to come who will be descended from you. You are all engaged in this great brit, this covenant that affirms you will be God's people. God will be your God. This universal covenant establishes that we are part of a profound and eternal tradition, a connection to our ancestors that will be carried forward to our descendants. Each of us, all of us, are part of this remarkable compact. It's an extraordinarily democratic and egalitarian agreement with God, a brit shared with everybody, regardless of gender or age. Children and women stand with men, not always the case at the time of the Torah or even today. So, what's the content of this commandment, the mitzvah, that we are now supposed to observe? At the climax of our portion, we are told, Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher nachi mitzavcha hayom lo nifleti mimcha. That is, look, this commandment that I, God, command you today is not too awesome for you. It's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens that you should say, who among us can go up to the heavens and take it for us and teach it to us to do it? It's not across the sea that you should say, who among us can cross over the sea, bring it back to us that we may do it? No, it's very close to you, already in your mouth and in your heart. You can do it. Perhaps the mitzvah, the commandment Nitzavim speaks about, is no more than just becoming aware of the presence of Torah in our midst, or more precisely, the presence of God in the here and now. In this season, as we get ready for Rosh Hashanah, we prepare for tshuva, repentance. But if God is here right now, tshuva is just a way of becoming aware that Torah is already available in our minds and God is here in our hearts. Tshuva, return, simply means God saying, return to me. Become aware again of me always being in your life. A great thing to remember as we approach Rosh Hashanah and this season of tshuva, of return and repentance. When we return in a moment on to Jewish, our guest, Abby Liebman, will explain how Mazon works and how it has done so much good over the 40 years that it has been helping to feed the hungry. Find out all about it when we come back in a moment on to Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israel struck at Hamas targets inside Qatar in a dramatic escalation of its efforts to kill leaders of the Hamas terror group it is battling in Gaza. President Donald Trump, who last week warned Hamas to accept a ceasefire offer or face consequences, may have given the Israeli military the green light for the strikes, which took aim at a U.S. ally that is home to a major U.S. military base, an ally that also has housed terrorists and funded them for a long time. Israeli sources initially believed they had killed their targets, but Hamas says its leaders survived the strikes, which rocked the Qatari capital. Qatar has until now played a prominent role brokering unsuccessful ceasefire negotiations between Hamas and Israel. It is also home to many of Hamas's political leaders, whom Israeli officials said after Hamas's October 7, 2023 war crimes attacks on Israel, that they intend to hunt down, regardless of their location. The strikes took aim at a residential compound that was known to be the home of some of the leaders and has been under Qatari guard during the current Israel-Hamas war. Among those targeted in the attack was Hamas's chief negotiator, Khalil al-Hayya, who met with Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman al-Thani in Doha last week. Other Hamas leaders known to be living in Qatar include Khaled Mashal, who helmed the political division before Ismail Haniyeh, whom Israel killed last year, and Zahir Jabarin, the group's top finance officials. Six people were killed in the strike, but Hamas, as its top leaders, were not among them. Israeli officials are increasingly doubtful that the strike was successful. Israeli media reported that the military's top brass opposed the timing of the strike, but were overruled by Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. Netanyahu said in a statement that Israel acted alone. Today's action against the top terrorist chieftains of Hamas was a wholly independent Israeli operation. Israel initiated it. Israel conducted it. Israel takes full responsibility. The strikes add Qatar to the list of countries where Israel has conducted operations ever since October 7th. It has conducted a ground war, airstrikes, and a strategic operation in Lebanon, which houses Hezbollah, all successful. Bombed targets in Iran, where it assassinated Haniya, struck Hezbollah targets inside Syria, and bombed the Houthis in Yemen, who have sent dozens of missiles at Israel. The Israeli military acknowledged the strikes, did not explicitly name that they took place in Qatar. The IDF and the ISA conducted a precise strike targeting the senior leadership of the Hamas terrorist organization, the military wrote. The IDF and the ISA will continue to operate with determination in order to defeat the Hamas terrorist organization responsible for the October 7th massacre. In other news, six people were murdered last week and 12 wounded, six seriously, when a pair of Palestinian terrorists opened fire on vehicles and pedestrians in Jerusalem's Rambout Junction. The two Palestinian terrorists, residents of the West Bank, arrived at the junction about 10 a.m. by car and opened fire at people waiting at the bus stop as well as at a bus that had just stopped. Police said a soldier and a number of civilians present at the scene fired at the terrorists and killed them. The IDF said the soldier was an off-duty squad commander in the military's new Hasmonean Brigade, a unit for ultra-Orthodox troops. Magen David Adom, the great Israeli rescue organization, said four of the victims were dead at the scene. Two others were rushed to the hospital and later succumbed to their wounds. At least six others are listed in serious condition, as well as two whose status is moderate. The dead were Levi Yitzchak Pash, 57 years old, Yaakov Pinto, 25 years old, who had just immigrated to Israel from Spain, Yisrael Matzner, 28 years old, Rabbi Yosef David, 43 years old, Rabbi Mordechai Seinstag, 79 years old, and Sarah Mendelson, 60 years old. The terrorists were identified by the Shin Bet Security Agency as Mohammed Taha from Katana and Mutana Amro from Kubeba. Those two villages are adjacent to each other on the outskirts of Ramallah in the West Bank, west of the junction on the other side of the Green Line in the West Bank. Law enforcement officials say the Shin Bet Security Agency arrested a resident of East Jerusalem suspected of smuggling the gunmen into Jerusalem by car. Malka Cohen, who was on the number 62 bus when the terrorists opened fire, recounted the harrowing moments of the attack. "I was on the bus was packed," she said. "The moment opened the door, terrorists came. It was terrible. I was by the back door. I fell on everybody and escaped. There was gunfire there beyond anything imaginable. I can't believe I'm standing here. Indescribable gunfire," she said. Hamas praised the deadly terrorist attack, calling it a heroic operation. A variety of Palestinian clergy in the West Bank, whose salaries are paid by the Palestinian Authority, praised the mass murderers and their act of brutality. In other news, an Israeli-Russian Princeton University graduate student who was kidnapped in Iraq in 2023 while conducting research there has been freed and will return to Israel now, according to U.S. President Donald Trump and her family. Elizabeth Cherkov was taken hostage in Baghdad March 21, 2023, while doing research for her doctorate about sectarianism in the region. In July 2023, the Israeli government announced she was being held by Kataib Hezbollah, a powerful Iraqi Shia militia that is backed by Iran. Separate from the Hezbollah based in Lebanon, it was designated by the U.S. as a terrorist organization back in 2009. Cherkov's sister Emma, a U.S. citizen, director of quantitative research for the ADL, cheered her release, crediting Adam Bowler, Trump's hostage envoy, who has also negotiated the release of hostages in Gaza, Russia, and elsewhere since beginning his work earlier this year. "We are thrilled for Elizabeth's family and her sister Emma Cherkov, our ADL colleague, who fought tirelessly for her release. We thank the administration for all they did to secure her release," wrote the ADL. "A relief to know that Elizabeth is free at last." Two Iraqi militia officials confirmed that Cherkov's release came about as a result of negotiations, not through a military operation. It was not immediately clear what, if anything, Kataib Hezbollah has received in return for releasing her. Trump wrote, Cherkov has been tortured for many months. He used her release as an occasion to pressure Hamas, holding 48 Israeli hostages, well, many of them dead bodies, to free the captives it ghoulishly holds. Cherkov's mother, Irina, told the Israeli press that she felt crazy joy, happiness her daughter is coming home, hopes all the families of our hostages get the same news. She thanked President Trump. Cherkov was released to the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. She is 38 years old. She has been taken to Sheba Hospital in Ramat Gan, where she will undergo an extensive evaluation and rehab process, similar to that devised for the Israeli hostages released from Gaza. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Abby Liebman is the president and CEO of Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger, which has done so much tremendous work in dealing with food insecurity, starvation, and advocacy for the most vulnerable part of our populations, both in America and around the world. Abby has been president and CEO for 14 years now. Is it hard to believe that that's true?
Yes, and we often talk about the sort of tiny whininess of Mazon, which is, I can't believe it's 14 years, and at the same time, it feels like I've been here for my entire career. It's a very weird feeling. There's a sense of connection, I think, for those of us who work at Mazon or serve on its board that ties us together in this vision that really lifts up the notion that we as Jews have an opportunity to realize a change for the better for those who struggle. And I think that that is so much a part of who we all are that you feel as if you've had this connection for, you know, decades as opposed right. to, in my case, 14 years.
Well, that's a decade and a half nearly, to be fair.
You're right. I'm just aging myself as we speak.
Well, I was told recently, don't say, oh, that's an old friend. Say it's a friend of long standing. It makes you feel younger.
Okay.
The High Holy Days are almost upon us. Now, as I recall, and as I've done in the congregations I've served, we always do a Mazon food drive around Pesach, around Passover, and pass out envelopes and encourage people to support Mazon, to give a percentage of the meals that they use at their simchas, but also at their seders. But why is the High Holy Days an important time for Mazon and for food work?
Well, I think that there's a moment during the High Holy Days when we're all much more introspective, that in the current ways of thinking about what is the purpose of those High Holy Days, and it is about understanding, I think, where others are, how they got there, how we got to where we are. So this idea of being very reflective and introspective, and because we also fast, Yom Kippur, we have some understanding of what it feels like to be without food. And because that fast we know is temporary, and we know that we will, in fact, satiate whatever hunger we have, it helps us to then gain, I think, some perspective and some empathy for those for whom there is no end for that fast, that they are struggling mightily to find enough food to feed themselves and their families in a way that is both sustainable and healthy.
You know, it's fascinating. I often talk to people, say, oh, I'm not going to come back for the afternoon in Yisker Ne'ila because I'm getting ready for my break fast. And I think...
yeah, I can understand that. You know, I think... a fundamental misunderstanding, I think, of what the idea of fasting, why you're fasting, and how fasting is actually an integral part of the observance of Yom Kippur, as it is for other fasting holidays. So I think we are again cognizant of the fact that this is a moment when our Jewish values are very present, and that we are hoping that people are thinking in terms of turning, in the best sense of Tshuva, to turning and becoming our best selves, in lifting each other up in difficult times, in the idea of listening and truly hearing what people are telling us about their circumstances and ways in which they have continued to struggle despite responses that others feel should be meaningful to them, and that we have enough awareness of self and of others to find ways to listen to what people really want and need, and then to inform those with the power to make decisions that will affect millions of people's lives, to do so in a way that embraces our highest and best self.
At a time when food is being used as a weapon in many parts of the world, but certainly in Gaza, it was weaponized first by Hamas, and now the world seems to think Israel has weaponized hunger. Tell us a little bit about Mazon's response to that food crisis.
So Mazon's work focuses on both the United States and Israel. And by Israel, we mean Israel proper within the Green Line. Mazon does not do work in Gaza, but we are not unaware of the difficult circumstances facing those who are struggling to find enough to eat in Gaza. So we have, our board did issue a statement suggesting that it is not consistent with what we see is our values as a Jewish organization to allow people to struggle with hunger when hunger is being used as a tool of war in some way. So we are not really involved in the Middle East more broadly, but much more concerned about raising issues about food security within Israel proper, and ensuring that the Israeli government has also got a robust response to the hunger that affects all Israelis.
In the interest of full transparency, I should note that my older daughter disperses SNAP. That's her job at a farmer's market nearby. And I will say SNAP does not provide a lot of food support in terms of it doesn't give you a wealth of food, but it's enough to get by from week to week for a lot of people.
I mean, the average SNAP benefit is about somewhere between $4 and $6 a day.
Right.
That is not a lot of money.
No, not hardly.
But there are literally tens of millions of people who are on this program.
Who are dependent on it, yeah.
Yeah, which just suggests that the need is great. So a thorough response is necessary.
I want to note before we close that that there are a number of organizations in Israel that Mazon also supports. One that our own family foundation has supported quite a bit. Leket is one of the recipients that does a great job in Israel.
Mazon's had a partnership with Leket for decades, and it's a really remarkable program.
Extraordinary. Joe Gittler's an amazing guy. Abby, I want to thank you very much for a great visit on Two Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about Mazon and how they can help?
Obviously, like many organizations, we have a website, and it's www.mazon.org, and Mazon is MAZON.org, and there's a lot of resources there. There's a lot of educational opportunities for all levels. And we also have a hunger museum, which is an all-virtual museum.
It's so cool. I was looking through it. It's an amazing virtual museum. The good part is you're not putting all that money into building the actual museum, but the virtual museum's terrific.
It is, and it's a remarkable way to understand where this country's response to hunger started and how we've ended up where we are now. And to learn from that history and to engage with it, to understand what we now can do in response to what we see on this horizon of growing food insecurity in the United States as opposed to less. So there are lots of resources there that can help steep people in this knowledge and then offer them an opportunity to act on it. We are very active in policy work at certainly at the federal level and also at the state level. We also have just launched a legal advocacy department where we will use resources on both staff and through pro bono volunteer attorneys to hold government actors accountable for enforcing the laws that we have on the books in this country that are designed to protect people from food insecurity.
And I want to note a Mazel Tov on the 40th anniversary of Mazon, but also a reminder the High Holy Days are here and it's a good time to help people eat. I think it's right. Thanks so much, Abby.
Thank you, Rabbi. I really enjoyed it.
Our pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. Our guest, we believe, will be Professor Barry Strauss, author of the terrific new book, Jews versus Rome. And please join us, Congregation Beit Simcha, every Friday night. Services in Onig Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush. Join us especially for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, coming up fast, a week from tomorrow night, Monday the 22nd. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. Everybody's welcome, but you must pre-register in order to spend the High Holy Days with me and our wonderful Beit Simcha family and our great musicians. A week from tomorrow night, Monday, September 22nd, Tuesday, September 23rd. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes for the upcoming High Holy Days. Now, just one short week away, it's Hayom Harat Olam. This is the birthday of the world from the Rosh Hashanah Shofar service. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Hayom Harat Olam, Hayom Ya'amid Bamishpat. Kol yetzurei olamim, im kevanim, im ka'avadim. Im kevanim rachameinu, kerachem aval banim. Ve'im ka'avadim. Einenu lecha teluyot. Ad
shetchoneinu v'totzicha or mishpateinu ayom kadosh.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.